Records. Before we get started, there's a few things I forgot to do last night. One of the things that I forgot to do is to acknowledge everybody who did service for the convention. All the subcommittees, everybody who stepped up last minute. So please, everybody who did service, please stand up. Whether it's programming, hospitality, stand up, get that recognition. And on behalf of the Westchester Area Convention Committee and Westchester area as a whole, we thank you, and we hope you stick around and do more service. Our next convention committee meeting will be the first Monday in December, so please show up. It'll be at Tuck Home, Immaculate Conception, and keep this unity going. We are having... I got a couple of things I promised some people I would do real quick, and we're going to get it moving.
Is there a flyer on that table?
We're having a give back dance, so you can spread the word. There have been flyers out December 10th. December 10th. I got something right. December 10th at Immaculate Conception. Everything is free. Food is free. And we're going to give it back to you. The DJ is going to charge you $1 each to get in, though. Other than that, I'm just kidding. I want to thank the DJ for putting up with us. We should put the step change and stuff. And I don't know about you, but I'm still feeling it from last night. And I'm not talking about the pain. I'm talking about the spirit. Like, my body's died, but my spirit is still alive. It's all good.
Where's that flyer? Can I have that flyer, Jess?
Yeah. I want to thank Connecticut, the Southern Fairfield area, for welcoming us. And on January 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Hilton Stanford Plaza, the Hilton Stanford in Connecticut, the the Connecticut Regional Convention of Narcotics Anonymous is having a convention. It's their 27th annual convention. You can register online at www.ctrcna.org. So please come out and support them. They welcomed us. Do your thing. And that's enough out of me. I'm going to bring up our vice chair to take us through the festivities in the morning. J.O.
I'm Jay and I'm an addict. I want to thank everyone that came out and supported us and made this a success. It's been a long 3 years since Guy first had this concept. And it's been an amazing journey. You know, there was times there that we didn't know if it was going to happen or not. And through God's grace, every single member in Narcotics Anonymous in this program, it became a reality. And like Guy was saying about last night, that spirit, when we had those glow sticks going and we dropped our banner, I don't know about you, but the one good eye that I got working was crying. I was crying. I couldn't see because I was crying. I want to remind everybody that we're selling free registrations for WACNA 2. Okay? I want to remind everyone we're selling free registrations for WACNA 2. And please come and get involved. We need $10. They told me $10. In the old days, they would say a 10 spot. But please come and get involved because we need all the help that we can get. We cannot do this by ourselves. All right, that's enough out of me. And we're going to get this business. All right. Let's see. Okay. NA has no rules, but this hotel has some. We request guests under 18 age of 18 are accompanied by parent at all times. Please ensure that they're not left unattended at any time. Areas that are particularly want guests to pay attention are the swimming pool, fitness centers, and the entrances of the hotel. Our hotel is 100% non-smoking. 100% non-smoking. Therefore, please ensure that no one is smoking within the facility. There are designated smoking spots outside the hotel where smoking is allowed. If a guest smokes in our rooms, the fine is $300 a day and will be applied to the credit card in reservation. Pets, 25 pounds or less, are allowed. Pet fees of $50 will be applied. Pets have to be kept on the leash at all times. Okay. Okay, we'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, and I would like to ask a member from programming, Anthony, to read Who's an Addict.
Hi, family. My name is Anthony. I'm a grateful recovering addict. Yeah. Who's an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, to getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jail, institution, and death.
Thank you, Anthony. And he did a lot of work at every event and right through this one. And next, from our registration committee, we'd like Alan to read What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program.
Hi, my name's Alan. I'm an addict. What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We're not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use, or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those of us who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
To read Why Are We Here, Leticia.
Oh, God. You know I'm little.
Good morning, I'm an addict. My name is Leticia.
Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of N.A., we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed the youth ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail and sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease for which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is impossible.
And next, I've asked to read the 12 steps is Rita.
All right, Rita.
I love you more. Good morning, my name is Rita and I'm an addict. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. So that you don't go to sleep, let's count. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. We humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. We continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. This sounds like a big order, and we can't do it all at once. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. There is one thing more than anything else that will defeat us in our recovery. This is an attitude of indifference or intolerance towards spiritual principles. Three of these that are indispensable are honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. With these, we are well on our way. We feel that our approach to the disease of addiction is completely realistic, for the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. We feel that our way is practical, for one addict can best understand and help another addict. We believe that the sooner we face our problems within our society and everyday living, just that much faster do we become acceptable, responsible, and productive members of that society. The only way to keep from returning to active addiction is not to take that first drug. If you are like us, you understand, you know, that one is too many and a thousand is never enough. We put great emphasis on this, for we know that when we use drugs in any form or substitute one for another, we release our addiction all over again. Thinking of alcohol as different from other drugs has caused a great many addicts to relapse. Before we came to NA, many of us viewed alcohol separately. We cannot afford to be confused about this. Alcohol is a drug. We are people with a disease of addiction who must abstain from all drugs in order to recover.
Okay. And we've asked to read the 12 traditions, the real J. JL?
Hi, family. I'm an addict from Mount Vernon, New York. My name is Jay. I have 3 years, 9 months, and 12 days. The 12 traditions of NA. We keep what we have only with vigilance. And just as freedom from the individual comes from the 12 steps, so freedom from the group springs from our traditions. As long as the ties that bind us together are stronger than those that would tear us apart, all will be well. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusting servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Six, an NA group or never endorse, finance, or lend the NA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every NA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Narcotics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, NA such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Narcotics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the NA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films.
All right, here we go.
12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It usually isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on NA unity. And that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines and our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say that our traditions eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise. Communication problems, differences of opinion, internal controversies, and troubles with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our predecessors are like those, no, many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the traditions, and our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work. Thank everyone for registering to the convention.
And now we've asked Vinny to read the press statement.
All right, Vinny.
Good morning, family. My name is Vinny and I'm an addict. First, I want to thank Westchester area for allowing me to be a part of this convention. You know, because without you people, I can't stay clean. So I need each and every one of you. Thank you. And our 11th tradition says our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Our primary purpose of our public relations effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to the still sick and suffering members. Still sick and suffering addict. Members of the press are often attracted to our conventions and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press approach you, please direct them to the convention information booth located in the lobby of the convention center.
Good job. And to read the identity statement, we've asked Steve.
All right, Steve.
I'm an addict named Steve. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. When NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted to talk about living clean or sober, the clarity of the NA message is blurred. To speak in this manner suggests that there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification as addicts is all-inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities, not our differences.
Thank you to all the readers. And now, we'd like Jessica, please come on up and introduce our main speaker this evening. I mean, our main speaker this morning, I'm sorry.
Jessica!
Tippy-toe, honey.
Hi, family. My name is Jessica, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Jessica!
I'd like to thank everybody for coming out and supporting Westchester area's first convention. And this morning, here to share her experience, strength, and hope with us, I'd like to welcome Vanessa from the Bronx.
Vanessa and I'm an addict. Boy, that feels so good. That feels so good to a person like me. I would like to thank, I am so honored. I am so proud and I am so nervous. Because thank you to the Westchester area. I was shocked when the guy called me up. And he said that we would like you to share at the convention. I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I was just so happy, you know? And then when he called me back and he said that I would be the closing speaker, I busted out crying. And I'm not much of a crier. I'll just do just about anything not to cry. It's not natural for me, but I'm getting better at it. So I have a feeling that it's going to be one of those days. Yeah, but y'all don't understand. I was overwhelmed. to be in a room full of people, that when I tell you that my name is Vanessa and that I'm an addict and you'll greet me back, that's like everybody in here giving me a hug. Because I was the type of person that I felt so invisible, so insignificant, so worthless, that to come into a place where people who didn't even know me, would embrace me. When I first came into the fellowship and I made my first meeting, I tried to make it far away from my house because I didn't want anybody to see me. You know, over there, I live in the Bronx, so it was over on Fordham Road in a little place, a meeting called Hugs Not Drugs, and I sat there trying to pretend that I knew something about something. I didn't know nothing about anything. I had on a pair of plaid shorts, some Chinese slippers, and a blouse, and which smelled like mildew because I'm a night crawler. I was a night crawler, and it's a bit too much. And during the day to go to work, I wore a uniform, so I didn't have to worry about that. You know, I turned into somebody completely different. I'm going to tell you the story. So I went into a meeting, and I'm thinking, I'm looking at everybody hugging and kissing and looking around, and I'm like, what kind of place is this? This is ridiculous. What? And, you know, and I thought that the person who was turned out to be the chairperson, I thought that she had on pearls and her hair up in a bun. And I thought that she was going to give us a lecture about drugs. So, and I was a little upset because I forgot my notepad, you know. That's what I thought, you know. So I'm waiting for everything to start. And I remember she said, my name is so-and-so and I'm an addict. And I remember sitting here going, that's a shame. What a shame. Oh, my God. Poor girl. You know? And I was like really shocked. And people, you know, they read everything, Then they got to the part, is there anybody here? At their first meeting. I put my hand up like this. And they said, the first meeting you ever been to in your life? I'm like, yeah. The very first, they're like, the first meeting? I'm like, yeah. And then when they realized that I was telling the truth, and it was my very first meeting in my life, that place erupted. Keep coming back. I was terrified because I'm like, I didn't know. And everybody was looking at me and some grab out to hug me. And I was stiff because they made me come up to the front, you know. I was like, oh my God. I was like, oh, I couldn't wait to go sit in my seat. And I wanted to like just disappear because remember, I didn't want anybody to see me. And then when I look across the room, there is somebody from my job going like this. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Now, I knew that something was wrong. I knew something was wrong. Because there was a time in my life when I used and was able to stop. And I was able to stop, and I would get married, use, able to stop, get married, able to stop for a while, use, able to stop, and get married. And, you know, it was always something. If it wasn't, always looking for something to fill a space. I knew it was empty, but I wasn't quite sure, you know, I want to sit down and think deep. I know it was empty inside. I wasn't really quite sure. See, I get all up in here and buy books, and I will self-diagnose, and I'll teach myself how, you know, because I think I'm brilliant sometimes, you know, and I outsmart myself and complicate matters that are so simple, like if you don't pick it up. Simple stuff. So something went wrong. Something went terribly, terribly wrong because I got to the point where I could no longer stop. I'm like, how did this happen? No matter what I tried, I just couldn't stop. and I knew something was wrong. And I'm like near the end of the story in a sense, but I remember a woman from my neighborhood. As a matter of fact, where is she? She lives in your building. One of my neighbors are here. And I heard her say to someone else, I don't do that anymore. This was probably a year before I made my first meeting. And for some reason, that stayed in my head. So when I was at the point in my addiction, when I was crawling all over the floor like an animal, looking for anything that looked like a speck of something, right? Something. Oh my God. I never want to live like that again. Yeah. Licking the floor, licking a dollar bill, licking my bed, looking all around. Oh, my God. My children are in the other room. And what made me think at first I wasn't so bad is because I still did the mommy thing. My kids were clean. I fed them. I did the homework thing. I showed up at school. I did all of that stuff. I couldn't wait for them to go to bed at night. Please hurry up and go to bed. Okay, we did all the spelling words. I'll do the rest of them, you know? I'll do the rest of them. And, you know, and I forged my son's handwriting. You know, the little, like, you know, like a 10-year-old's handwriting and tried to write. He's left-handed and I'm trying to write, you know, you got to write it 10 times and look up to me like that. Go to bed, you know? Hurry up. You know, that type of thing. And, you know, I even read the stories, you know, all of that. Because I had... something was calling it, you know, and I was a ritualistic type of user. I knew I was losing my mind because what I did was, I'm going to tell you, I would smear my body with Vaseline from head to toe, buck ass naked in my house. So that's when my kids had to stay in their room. If they had come out and see that, that would have shocked them. You know, head to toe Vaseline, eyebrows darkened in with an eyebrow pencil going up here like me the merciless, and I would stare at myself in the mirror, like, because I didn't even know, who is this person? You know, I'm looking, I would stare, I was trying to find something that was still alive. I felt like I was dead or dying. My kids are in the other room, and I love my children. I adore them. And I would write letters to them while my heart is pounding out of my chest. I could see. I would lay back in my bed, and I could see my heart moving. There was nothing I could do about it. But look at my arms when the muscles are jumping, right? They're jumping, and I could feel it. And all I could say is, oh. And I could hear my heart. I could see it. And I would try to write a letter to my sons with a million instructions in case when they wake up, I was dead. Because that's what I felt was going to happen soon. That my kids, who I adore, would wake up one morning, find me covered in Vaseline from head to toe, my eyebrows drawn in, right? Mess them up for the rest of their life. You know, who wants to see their mother naked? I'm like, with the Vaseline on, with a bunch of instructions about, remember this, remember to take care of each other, remember who to go to if you have a bunch of instructions, because I couldn't stop. By day, I was Miss Vanessa. Hello, how are you? Mm-hmm. That type of thing. Got the Mother of the Year Award. My children went to private school. I scraped up the money the best way I could. If you told me that I was out there tricking, I'd tell you a damn lie. But that's not true. There's something about doing step work where you got to see the truth. You know what I'm saying? And then I want to talk about exchange, ain't no robbery. Because see, I always admired the hip woman. You know, the women I used to see in my youth, the ones that used to wear the tight dresses with everything all pushed up with the pouty mouth. That's who I wanted to be. Ah, you know. Yeah. popping my finger. That's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be Miss Vera. I wanted to be Miss Vera, the lady. I wanted to be everybody but me, but Miss Vera from around the corner with the pouty mouth, who I used to see my married Uncle Kenny do the twist with real slow and easy. Now, I didn't see him dance like that with his wife, you know, girdled down and all proper with the apron on and all. He ain't pay her no mind, but Miss Vera, yeah. Oh, man. And because I used to see this kind of stuff when I was little, because I was real quiet, and I would get under, when they had their parties and stuff, I would get underneath the table, and I would see some stuff. I was raised in a household of torture and pain by a maniac. This woman wasn't my mother. And I would see Uncle Kenny dance with Miss Vera. I would see a look on his face that I didn't know what it was at the time because I was too young. It is called lust. You know, something about his eyes, his mouth. Oh, I was like, okay. I was like, that's interesting. What I saw was that people will excuse you. This is, you know, coming from a child's point of view, that a person would excuse you if you had some kind of mind or mood altering substance in your body. So they're drinking, could fall down, drag the curtains off the window, pee on themselves, set the rug on fire, you know, and things like that. And when I'm like, because I just know they're going to get it, you know, because they were adults. And all I would hear is, that's all right. They're just a little high. I was like, no, that's interesting. So, you know, so I equated that with, if I'm drunk or have some substance in me, that would give me an excuse to be who I am, and people will accept me, because the atmosphere that I grew up in was a very harsh atmosphere. Unfortunately, the lady was a maniac. She was very abusive, and I suffered horrible abuse when I was a child. Really, really horrible abuse. So I didn't have a great sense of self, and I learned to, my survival skills went up, you know, because I had to, like, sniff the air to see what mood she was in so that I could stay out of her way, you know, that type of thing. I had to do or be what she wanted me to be, because I couldn't be myself. She didn't allow me, and she didn't allow me to associate with people because she didn't want people outside of the household to know what was going on inside. And there was some insanity going on inside my house. So I was taught to isolate. I was taught to stay by myself. My best friend was me, because I have no brothers and sisters. But I want to tell you about, like, obsession and compulsion, that type of thing, setting in way before I decided to use drugs. As a child, I would climb out my window, again with the Vaseline. You know, Vaseline all over me, buff ass naked, at 8, 9 years old, climb out the window from my bedroom and go in the backyard and spin around under the moon. Wow. Naked. I had to do it. You understand what I'm saying? I had to. Now, you know, if this crazy woman had woke up and saw me outside spinning, you know, you know, naked, that she would have killed me. But I couldn't help it. You know, it was like something would come over me and I would get up out of my bed and do it. Risk my life, climb out the window and do this. From the beginning, it was there. Wow. And as time went on, I went on a search because I wanted to feel good. I didn't feel good. I felt empty, and I went on a search to find a drug. I tried this. I'm not very good at instructions, but I learned in here. When I got here, I was 44 years old, and I learned in here to take suggestions, but I didn't do that too well out there. They would say, Vanessa, cut this in half. I ain't paying no mind. I'll take the whole little orange pill. and then go try to go to bed and see a monster in my room tonight. Oh, good grief. So that wasn't the drug for me, you know? Everything I tried, I would usually hallucinate, and it always involved a monster of some sort. And it's funny how I turned into a monster in the end. So I searched, I did my research, I found as, and I found, this one I like. Now people told me that they saw the result of this particular drug, $2 bag of heroin, sniffing it. $2.
Come on,
man. Make that something. $2 stinking. And when that girl gave me that bag of dope, I jumped up like I hit the lottery. I was so happy. Oh, finally I can try this. Just looking to just do something so that I could try to feel better. Oh, man. But what happened was, is that other people saw the effects of the drug on me, but I didn't feel it. It wasn't the feeling I was looking for. So the search continued. And plus, it was too, when I got acquainted with my mother, that it was easily recognizable that I was on something. And my mother is an interesting woman. I didn't want her to see me nodding, but they told me that I was, and I figured I can't take the chance. My biological mother is a very tough woman, for those who know her. And then I found something I fell in love with. And I said, this is the feeling that I'm looking for. And that's the feeling that looking and chasing this feeling brought me down to, I was like a beast. I didn't care about washing up with my stinking uniform on, going to work where everybody said, wow, you got a good job. And I'm, good morning, good afternoon. Pay your fare. You know, all kind of craziness like that. And my head is shaking and carrying on. Heart beating out my chest. Y'all were talking about when I'm in the meeting, y'all were talking about hope. Y'all were talking about love. That y'all were gonna love me until I learned to love myself. I was like, what are y'all talking about? This is absolutely ridiculous. But in the beginning, people would share and turn around and look at me. I wanted to say, like, look the other way. Y'all are making me nervous. You know, y'all are making me nervous. I don't know what you're talking about. You're giving me too much attention, and I don't know what to do with all of this attention. But this is, that's the love of this program. Imagine that. People, you come in, y'all knew that I was hurting. Y'all knew that I was hurting. And y'all knew exactly what to do for me. Y'all knew that I needed love. And if you ask me, I will tell you that nobody ever loved me. But I'm quite sure along the way there were people that did love me, but I didn't pay attention because I was too caught up with protecting myself. You know, protecting myself. I had no time for that. I couldn't hear it. And then on top of that, I was truly convinced that I was not lovable. I wasn't lovable because I had hellified rejection and abandonment issues. I have parents that just didn't care. Now, I'm not going to beat them down, but they just didn't have the maturity to take care of a child. And so they did what they thought was best. But unfortunately, I fell in the hands of a person that was crazy. You know what I mean? And I suffered. And I used to say, I don't have a relationship with God. I couldn't understand it. I kept questioning myself in my youth. Like, why am I here? Why was I even born to have to live like this? Yes. To have to cover scars. Who I couldn't go to school because my arm is broken. My eye is blacked up. Or something horrible. My ribs are cracked. Like, how, why, you know, like, God, where are you?
Yes.
Where are you when she's stomping me? Where are you when she's banging my head on the floor? Where are you? So having a relationship with God and y'all are talking about God, I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear it. I said, oh, here we go with the nonsense. You know, now y'all don't want me to believe in it. Well, where was he? Where was he when I was getting all beat up? Where were you then? You know, I just didn't understand that. You know, where were you when I was all scarred up, crisscrossed on my back like a friggin' slave? Where were you then? And then you wanted me to come in here and talk about a higher power. Get one, a God. Why? Why? For what? I remember looking at a picture when I was small, looking at a picture that had a bunch of little children and a depiction of a deity, right? A bunch of little kids. I would stare at that picture, stare, because I was looking for me. I was hoping that I would be in the picture so that I can understand, well, okay, maybe he loves me too. But I didn't see myself in the picture. So I said, why should I even try? And when I found out that punishment wasn't immediate, and in a very childish way, and me and my friend Amy were in the backyard, and we said, you know what, let's curse. Let's curse. And so we were in the backyard, and we're looking around, and we said, shit. You know, we're looking all around, waiting for the lightning to strike us and maybe the ground to open up. And when that didn't happen, it was on. That was on. It was gifted. You know, just all of that. Because punishment wasn't immediate. So now y'all want me to talk about some higher power. So disgusted. Every time somebody says something about higher power, I turned up my nose. I turned up my nose, and when I look back, I may not have liked the way things turned out, but when I think about it, that same woman who tortured me so very badly, she died when I was 12, so that gave me freedom. And I went to live with somebody else. And that was okay for a while, but at least it was a lot better than being, you know, beat up all the time or hurt, getting some kind of broken bones or something like that. But then I had other issues in that house, and then I had to move with somebody else, and then I had to move with someone else. And I never really had an opportunity to develop a personality of my own, because I had to follow the rules and regulations of each household that I ended up in. And that was kind of difficult. So by the time I got here, I don't know who the hell I was. I was a little bit of this, I was a little bit of that. And somewhere in my early 20s, I experienced some kind of emotional trauma. Somebody abandoned me and rejected me, and I lost the ability to talk. I couldn't talk. Imagine living in a household, maybe about five or six other people, again, with people not related to me, and I can't talk, and I hadn't talked, maybe for a month, and nobody noticed. What kind of crap is that? You know, when I came out the bathroom and cut all my hair off, and I'm sitting there like a porcupine, and they're like, wow, you cut your hair. And I'm just sitting there, and I cannot talk. I couldn't figure out how the brain and the mouth and everything worked, and I would just sit there and not say a word. And no one noticed. What kind of nonsense? That's crazy. So what I did was, and I used to have horrible anxiety attacks, and I would go out, I couldn't go outside because I would start shaking and trembling and devastated by being rejected. Devastated by somebody abandoning me, and it just shut me down. I couldn't cope with that type of thing, and I still have a hard time with it. Tell me you're gonna leave me and see what happens. I'm getting better. My boyfriend's out there. Tell me you're gonna leave me and see what happens. No, I'm just not good at it. You know, and I'm getting better. I'm getting better because of step work. Imagine that. Spend all this daggone money on psychiatry and religion and all kind of nonsense like that. Go to the psychiatrist, and she's talking about what you're dreaming about. She's taking notes. I'm telling her that the dog was cheering with me, was smoking a cigarette. She's laughing. What am I spending my money on? You know what I mean? That makes no sense. You go to get help, you know, outside help. And you're telling your, you know, whatever I think I'm supposed to talk about, and she's laughing. I kind of like, so that didn't work. You know, that wasn't working. I come into a program where I had to learn. I had to learn by watching you. Because the hope thing, I had to see what it looked like. I didn't know too much about how it felt when I came in, but I had to see what hopeful people behave like. So I really, really, really watched y'all. So hopeful people behave like this. And y'all came in and y'all shared your ups, your downs. I live in the Bronx. I've seen people slide in at the door and land at their knees and say, oh my God. Because they had gone through something, found out that their husband, their boyfriend, fiance, whoever he was, just married somebody else an hour ago. You know what I mean? Slide. I'm like, whoa. I love the meeting because I wanted to see who was going with who and who was going to. It was like, and that's what kept me coming. Not so much the message, but to see who was going out with who was going to fight who was going to do this, who's, oh man, nosy. And figuring out, but that's what kept me coming. And so it was time to do some work and I felt good. I started doing step work, maybe not because, oh, I want to get better. No, I started doing step work because I wanted to share something that made some sense. Just reading the text alone wasn't enough. I needed some guidance. I needed to hear other people's experience, strength, and hope in order to get, because like I said, I had to hear how hope, you know, the honesty and all that willingness and all of this stuff, I had to hear it and see it in action in order for me to get an idea of how to do this. Because I just didn't know. Because I came here empty. I didn't know. I wasn't in touch with any feelings. What feelings? Like, again, what were y'all talking about? So all of this, participating, doing service, being grateful. Imagine that, being grateful, because I was very ungrateful. I felt the whole world owed me. The whole world owed me, because y'all don't know how I suffered. I could do what I want, say what I want, and don't say nothing to me. I decided I was going to do what I wanted to do, and I didn't want anybody to say anything to me, because my life was hard. Like I'm the only one, right? But that's just how I felt. It's about me. I don't care nothing about you. I'll just do what I want. So what? You know, because I'm going godless. Remember, there's no relationship here with me and God, because I thought he abandoned me. You abandoned me. You left me to do what, you know, to let people do what they wanted to do with me. But then there was a move from being a victim to a volunteer. There was a time in my life when, of course, when you're a child and you have adults ruling your life, of course, what could you do? But at a point when I'm growing up, I volunteered for the very same things that I allowed other people to do when Just do it. Hurt my feelings. Stop me. You know what I mean? Do what you want with me, because I ain't nothing no way. You know? Who am I? I'm nobody. So just treat me any way you want, because I don't deserve any better. But when I came in here, I got with some women and they told me that no one is allowed to hurt me. And I don't have to stand for that kind of nonsense in the name of love. I had to come in here and get some instructions on how to live. What I didn't have when I was a child, I got it when I came in here, and I am so grateful to all of you. All of the people I see that I recognize their face, all my predecessors, I love you. Because you taught me how to live. You told me that it's okay to be Vanessa. It's all right to be Vanessa. You are okay. You all told me, see, little bit by little bit through step work and developing a relationship with God, a God that I adore. I can say that because I was ashamed to say that, because I didn't think with the stuff I've done that who am I to talk about God now? You know what I mean? Who am I? You know, to did anything I wanted to do and I didn't care. And who am I to come? But you told me something about humility.
Yes.
I had to go like like a child and develop a relationship a little bit and a little bit and a little bit and a little bit, so I feel comfortable. Where I can say, and y'all told me I could design the relationship. You know, so sometimes, oh my God, I am so happy. Y'all gave me what I've always wanted. What I've always wanted, a family. A family of people. We're not even blood related, but I know. Just because y'all are members of Narcotics Anonymous and y'all could identify with the misery and the suffering of using, you know, and that you want to help me. That you will help me. And I love y'all for that. I want to thank my predecessors, oh my God. You know, the people, oh my, with their time and their experience, who were willing to share their hopes and dreams, which opened up mine. I didn't see anything for me. I was writing letters to my kids because I thought I was going to die. I thought I was going to die. And then, all of a sudden, I feel alive. Imagine that. My sons are in their 20s. They're doing well. Never with my insanity, you know, that they were accustomed to. They were accustomed to, you know, mommy spazzing out. Like, I was a dramatic mother. I dropped to my knees. Oh, Lord, why have thou forsaken me? You know, all that kind of stuff. You know, slide across the floor, run down the hallway, trying to kick the door in and all this nonsense. You know, so they were accustomed to me. You know, and they were like, I hate it when you get like that. And they would run in their room, you know, and I'd open it up. You know. But they loved me. It's funny that a lot of their girlfriends, especially the youngest one, they kind of act like me. So maybe he needs some help. And, you know, like, I remember my son, I said, why did you go to your father and have him come to school because you got suspended? You know, and I looked at him, he looked at me, and I was pretty upset. Because my thing is like, I'm your mother, you know, that type of thing. And he said, he looked at me, he had such an innocent little face, and he said, because you're crazy, you know. And he ran into his room, and I'm like, maybe it is the drugs. I have another son, my oldest son has autism. Okay. And they usually mimic what you do, mimic what you say. And he was on the couch going, and the teacher's like, Mrs., I have a lot of names, so I'm going to say this name, Mrs. Francis, you know, your son is behaving quite odd. And we're trying to pinpoint where this behavior is coming from. I'm like, I really don't know. But I have to wind it up. What do you say, wind it up or wind it down? Wind it down, right? Okay, so I'm learning about it, but wind it down. I was nervous when I first came up here. I feel like I was all over the place. And I'm so proud. I am so proud to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to tell people in the street. You know, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't care what you say and what you think and whatever, because this is the best life I've ever had. I had to come in here, and with your help, your helped me to grow up. Y'all helped me to feel like somebody. Y'all helped me to find my voice. Well, I'm not going to allow anybody to do but so much to me, because I'm getting better. I'm getting better. You know, I still take a little something, something. You know, what? You know, not as much as I used to. Because I have women that will share that. Nobody's allowed. That's what I was taught. Nobody's allowed. And, you know, I want to close with a tune. I think I'm talked out. I've been all over the place, but this is what came out of me. Like I said, and I cried. Wow. Thank you. I see all of you. Thank you for allowing me to share. All right.
Hello, I'm Jay, and I'm an addict. Okay, before we close this up, I would like Janet to come up, and she has something to hand out.